Welcome to Ring of Fire, I'm Farron Cousins. Coming up on today's show, Heather Digby Parton from Salon.com is going to be joining me once again to go through all of the craziness that has happened in Donald Trump's world in just the last week as his legal problems continue to get so much worse. Also, two men were convicted this week in the plot to kidnap Michigan's Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer. We're going to bring you the details on that. We also have other governors that are facing some pretty serious problems. Kristi Noem from South Dakota, a Republican rising star, an ethics panel in her state this week, ruled that she did in fact engage in misconduct when she coerced, as far as we can tell, state employees to give her daughter her real estate appraiser's license. And lame duck Congressman Madison Cawthorn is in even more trouble over his campaign finances. We'll bring you the details on that. We've got a lot coming up today, so don't go anywhere, because Ring of Fire starts right now. Donald Trump once again coming off yet another very bad week where really almost every day things just seem to get worse for him. So joining me now to talk about the latest developments that have happened within just the last 7 days is Heather Digby Parton from Salon.com. Heather, always wonderful to have you here on Ring of Fire. Welcome back. Lot of stuff, right? I mean, my goodness, every day. There is some new development in this document scandal. And at some point, you know, you got to wonder, what is Trump's end game? How does he even navigate any of this? Because every day it's just so much worse. You wake up and it's so much worse for him.
Well, absolutely. Thanks for having me, first of all. And yeah, I went on vacation thinking, oh, it's the dog days of August, you know, not much happens, Congress will be in recess, it's all, you know, the lid blew off of everything with Donald Trump down there in Mar-a-Lago, and you're in Florida, so you're right in the middle of all that stuff. And it's an astonishing story. I mean, even by Donald Trump standards, and we've seen a lot. I mean, he was impeached twice. He led an insurrection and a coup, but even after doing all those things and being, you know, voted out of office, although he won't admit it, I think he knows that he was, he still absconded from the White House when he left with hundreds, literally hundreds of classified documents, it appears. And the National Archives very, you know, gently tried to get them back. They sent him letters. They tried to cajole him. They said, you know, we really need them. Over and over again, they tried. I mean, this has become clear just in the last few days how much the National Archives really treated him with kid gloves in a way that would never happen with anybody else who had a bunch of classified documents in their storage room. But they did. And then, you know, finally they had to get the Department of Justice involved because he wasn't being forthcoming. They ended up subpoenaing him to get the documents. He still wasn't being forthcoming. He gave a few back, but, you know, held on to a number of others, which they knew. I mean, I think the National Archives had some awareness of what he had, and they knew that he hadn't given them all back. And there also appears to have been some kind of a witness who, you know, talked to the Department of Justice about what they knew about all this. And then finally, they did this search at the beginning of August. And then ever since then, Trump has been treating this is just a great thing for him. It's just terrific because he's collecting some money from the rubes who are, you know, willingly giving this billionaire money all the time, which I'll never understand. And so he thinks this is really working out great for him. And it really is not. This is not a good story for Donald Trump. It really isn't. Although they're trying to spin it that way, the Republicans and Trump, you know, oh, this is a terrible abuse of power. And it's the Gestapo knocking, you know, storming Mar-a-Lago to take the documents. Whatever. It really isn't a good story for him. And on some level, even his people have to know it. I mean, these are people, after all, who spent the last 5 years chanting gleefully, lock her up, about Hillary Clinton, who they found literally three classified documents in the documents that were turned over that, you know, that she cooperated with with the Department of Justice and gave them. And they were low-level classified documents and nothing like what we're seeing now. I mean, from what we heard from the New York Times this week, there are 700 classified documents in the cache that he took out of there. And some of them, the highest level of classification that exists. So, I mean, this is not a story that I think, I mean, I was confused when it broke about the fact that everybody was going, oh my goodness, Donald Trump's really going to benefit from this one. I'm going, are you people crazy? I mean, yes, the country's gone mad, but they haven't gone that mad, you know, that this is okay. So yes, this is an amazing story. And I think it gets wilder by the day. As the more we find out, the crazier it gets, as is per usual with Donald Trump.
Yeah. And you know, what's interesting along that point too, was I think a day or two after it happened, you had Cassidy Hutchinson, who of course was, you know, the star witness over the summer. She actually came out and said, congratulations, you just handed the next election to Donald Trump. And sure. I mean, there was probably a few hours, right after it happened, where a lot of people thought, oh no, this is going to create the sympathy. But then when just even a little bit of information started coming out, we immediately did see the shift in the polls where most Americans say, oh, actually, I do support that. Independents say, yeah, I support this. No, I don't support attacking the FBI. Even I think about 50% of Republicans say, yes, I'm okay that this happened. So whatever little bump Trump got from this, you know, thinking, oh, great, no publicity is bad publicity. Right. That really washed away after about 24 to 48 hours. But he doesn't realize that. Like, no. He still thinks this is the best thing to ever happen to him. And it's really not. It's looking worse and worse by the day. And we're seeing these big shifts in the polling data just from all of this too. So it ain't working out the way they think it is. And if they continue to pretend otherwise, hey, that's probably going to help the Democrats in the end.
Oh, I think so. I mean, and you know, obviously this is not the only thing that's helping Democrats. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on, but what it plays into, I mean, we had a poll this week from NBC News. I think it came out last weekend that had this very surprising result that the top issue in it was, you know, worries about democracy.
Yeah.
I think it was worries about threats to democracy was the top issue. Or what in the world is that? I mean, it came in above the economy and above inflation and a bunch of other issues that, you know, you always think of as being, well, of course, the economy is number one. That's how it always goes, unless there's a war on, right? I mean, that just always comes in that way. And it didn't. And, you know, there was a lot of speculation at the time that that result wasn't as straightforwardly positive for Democrats as you might think, because there are a lot of Republicans who think that there's a threat to democracy from the voting, you know, from the 2020 election big lie. But when you and I thought that at first, too, I'm thinking, well, you know, who knows what that really means to people. But when you looked at the crosstabs, it's not. It's mostly Democrats who have that opinion and independence. And that's why that result became, you know, sort of rose to the top of the issue matrix. And, you know, that's really important, because when you put that on top of course, the abortion issue, which is driving a ton of votes in all these early special elections, and that result in Kansas when it was on the ballot, and all these new registrations, mostly of women, which is very interesting too. You know, that those two issues and apparently guns as well in the wake of the Uvalde massacre down there in Texas. When you have Donald Trump come along in the middle of all this, and this after the January 6th, hearings, which were, you know, very potent and very, I think, they had played a big part in raising that issue of threat to democracy to the top of the list. Then you got Donald Trump coming along and saying, oh, look at me, I'm being persecuted, you know, because all I did was take a few documents, I mean, from the White House that I'm not entitled to, that turn out they're classified and I shouldn't have them, and nobody knows why, and I won't explain why. I think that, you know, that is making a huge difference. I mean, what we're seeing now after this last week of more primary elections is, and the polling is showing it, there's been a real shift to the Democrats. And I think you have Donald Trump to thank for that, because, you know, his belief that any publicity is good publicity, and he needs to be at the top of the, you know, on TV all the time, and everybody has to acknowledge, you know, his leadership of the Republican Party. I think that is, and I said this for months, I wrote it in my column in Salon months and months ago, going, you know, Donald Trump is the gift that keeps on giving to Democrats, because he won't shut up. You know, if the guy would just lay low, I mean, all he had to do was wait through the midterms. They were begging him to do it, but he couldn't do it. And of course, you know, he refused to cooperate with the government with these documents, and ended up, you know, they had to do this before the election, right? I mean, they couldn't wait, and it's classified documents. They waited as long as humanly possible, maybe too long in a lot of people's views. So, you know, here he is in the middle of things, and it, you know, that tends to benefit Democrats. You know, it really does. He lost the last election, lost the 2018 election. So he's not a guy you really want out there if you're a Republican. But there he is.
And it is so interesting to watch just this evolution of excuses. You know, the early days, the Republicans are saying, oh, well, the FBI probably planted stuff there.
Right.
And then we find out it's classified, and like, oh, but no. He had declassified all of that. So it's really not that big of a deal. And then, of course, it is. Well, Hillary Clinton did it and Obama did it. So that's totally cool, which, again, is not even what really happened. But now this week, Trump not only changed his tune once again, but he admits that he did it. He said, I was holding on to these things because I was going to put them in the presidential library. It's okay. Well, one, there is actually a legal process for you to be able to do that. But two, you just admitted that you took the documents intentionally.
Right.
And to me, I mean, that right, that's game over, though. That should be the end of it. You just admitted to the crime. You said, yes, of course I robbed the bank because I thought the money would be safer at my house. No, you can't admit to these things. His lawyers, and we all know, again, the report saying he can't even find good lawyers to hire, but these poor, not very good lawyers have to just be slapping their foreheads every 5 seconds when this man opens his mouth, because he probably could have had a decent defense somehow. But the more he talks, I don't even see how he can possibly win a court. If they prosecute him, I just don't see any way he prevails, because he's already admitted to doing the actual thing he's accused of doing. I don't see how you get out of that.
I don't either. The only defense they have, and this is true of many of his, you know, of his legal problems, is, you know, well, gee, I'm just too dumb to know what I was supposed to do. So I didn't really understand that, you know, I was breaking the law. I mean, that's really it. I mean, it's like, oh, I didn't realize that I was supposed to do that. We had these processes. I mean, the idea of the presidential library, A, there is no plan for a presidential library. He's never announced one. There's no discussion of one. There's no fundraising for one. And that's something that presidents always do. And the reason for that, obviously, is because he's running again. So, he, you know, you do the presidential library once you're done with your presidency. And he doesn't believe that he is done with it. So that's one thing. And the other thing, as you mentioned, the lawyers, this last thing that he did this week, which was just astonishing. And I'm not a lawyer, but I can read English. And I'm telling you, that filing that he, first of all, they went judge shopping. He went to find one at the outer edges of the jurisdiction, so that he, a judge that he appointed to file this thing, which was weird because there's a case going on in this courtroom already, and he could file it. He would file it there. He probably will have to refile it there. But in the meantime, he goes judge shopping and files this amazing complaint that is filed completely incorrectly. Every lawyer's going, that was my first year law student that filed this thing, I'd flunk them. And part of the reason for that is, yes, his poor lawyers, some of whom, you know, really should not be lawyers, are, you know, I'm sure they're powerless because he's writing this. It's clear he wrote it. He's going on and on about how unfair everything is. He brings up Peter Strzok and his paramour, Lisa Page, you remember from the Russia investigation. I mean, No lawyer would ever file anything like that. It's an insult. It's an insult to the judge. It's an insult to the legal system. They know better. They would be sanctioned for doing something like that on their own. He obviously did that himself, and then the lawyers didn't know what they were doing, so they filed it incorrectly and didn't check off the right boxes. I mean, it was real amateur hour. I think you and I could do a better one than that. And we're not lawyers. Well, I don't know. Maybe you are a lawyer.
No, I'm not. I'm not.
but you know, this was really ridiculous. And of course, you know, a lot of this is delaying tactics. But again, we come back to the original thing. A lot of this is to keep Donald Trump in the news. He doesn't have his Twitter feed. He's got Truth Social, which is, you know, that you ever look at it. I don't know if you ever do, but if you ever look at his Truth Social feed, you know, he doesn't get a lot of retweets. I mean, doesn't get a lot of replies, and the replies he gets are all memes and, you know, just stupid stuff. And it's not Twitter. Let's just put it that way. It just isn't. And he knows it. He knows it. So he has, in his view, whatever it takes to get in the news and to be in the news and to have everybody talking about him, it's good. And he's wrong about that. It's not actually good for him. And certainly it's not good for the Republican Party that's trying to compete in this election. So I think that kind of thing, I mean, that's what's really bringing him down now, right? I mean, this is what is killing him. It's this constant need to do this stuff. And here he is in the middle of this is a very serious legal issue. This isn't, you know, I don't know whether they'll prosecute him. You know, there's prosecutorial discretion. Merrick Garland may decide, you know what, it's not worth the trouble. I'm not going to do it. But I'm telling you, this, you know, General Petraeus was convicted of, you know, allowing classified documents to fall into the hands of one person, his, you know, biographer or whatever. You know, there that Sandy Berger, who was, I think he was President Clinton's, was he Secretary of State or you know, Director of National Intelligence, something like that. And he was convicted of, you know, stuffing some documents from the National Archives into his socks and going out, you know, leaving the room with them. And I mean, these people, they faced criminal sanctions for this stuff. And these are big, important people. I mean, for them to not do that with Donald Trump, I think, you know, you really got to ask yourself. I mean, that would be, in my view anyway, it would be a huge mistake. And I'm hopeful. I mean, I don't know what they'll do to him. You know, he's not going to face jail time, I don't think, you know, but whatever, you know, a convicted felon running for president seems like kind of a bridge even the Republicans might not want to cross. But, you know, who knows? For him in jail, and actually he'd be the president from jail.
That wouldn't surprise me at all. And you know what the best thing about all this is? Let's suppose for a second DOJ looks at this and says, okay, we just don't want to prosecute this. Well, there's still New York. There's still the fake elector scheme, which, you know, that one's picking up steam. There's still Georgia that is also picking up a lot of steam right now. And then what is it? 22 civil lawsuits, including the one from E. Jean Carroll that could prove that he raped her. I mean, he can walk away from one thing, sure. But when you have so much out there, eventually something's going. I say that. I honestly can't say it for certain, but you would think something, somewhere, sometime, with all of these things happening, when the one thing is going to certainly break our way at this point. He can't continue to just have the best luck of anybody that ever lived with all of these legal problems. But again, you never know. And that's the worst part of it all. But I'm confident something with one of these things is going to be bad for him. And the document thing kind of seems like the most cut and dry of all of them. And that's why I think it is so important.
I agree. I mean, to me, this is one, it really is not a difficult case. You have somebody who took a bunch of classified documents, stored them in his, I don't know, basically, what is it? It's a hotel. It's a, you know, a private club filled with strangers that are walking in and out. It's not like it's, you know, it was in a very secure situation. And he refused to give them back when they asked for it. I mean, and they gave him plenty of chances to give them back. no harm, no foul. We just want the documents back. Nobody was looking to convict him of anything at that point. And he just refused to give them back, raising all these questions of why in the world did he want them in the first place? I mean, there is no presidential library, as we talked, that's not on the table. So why did he want them? And this is a guy who, you know, considering his past business practices, what we know of how he deals with foreign leaders, you're right. Anyone is right to be suspicious of what he wanted with those. I mean, the questions range, the suspicions range the gamut from, oh, he just wanted to show off for his friends and have these too. He wanted to sell them on eBay, you know, sell memorabilia on eBay, to, you know, he wanted to blackmail foreign leaders, some of whom, I mean, we have some evidence that there was some stuff in there about foreign leaders, President Macron from France. They that's actually named in the list of documents that they retrieved. And, you know, then you have business dealings. You know, does he have information that could have contained, you know, some kind of, you know, leverage in business deals around the world? And then finally, there's this idea that this is high level, you know, potentially nuclear information, which I discounted, thinking that, A, he'd never have his hands on that stuff. You know, that would they, how would he get it, you know, and have it in his hands on a piece of paper? But remember, and I was reminded of this by an article on Talking Points memo this week, that he's obsessed with nuclear weaponry and everything else. This is a big subject for him. He would constantly say he was kind of a genius and knew more than anybody else did about nuclear weapons and nuclear technology because his uncle taught at MIT, and that somehow he, by osmosis, I guess, or some genetic thing, he too was a genius about these things. And he was going back to the 80s. He had an obsession with nuclear weapons. And, you know, there was a lot of stuff throughout his presidency in which he was, you know, constantly, you know, there were reports that he wanted to beef up the nuclear arsenal. You're going, oh my God, you know, really? That was the one where, I can't remember what it was he said. It was General Mattis, or maybe it was the Secretary of State at the time, I can't remember his name, who, you know, called him something like a moron or something, you know, and that was reported in the press. But then the Talking Points made this observation, which I had totally sort of passed over and hadn't thought about. In his last year in office, and maybe a little bit before, he kept talking to people, sort of saying, well, believe me, we've got some weaponry nobody even knows about. I can't talk about it, but I made sure that we have some new systems that really, you know, nobody wants to mess with us, let me tell you that. And he was sort of hinting around that there was something going on there that he was, you know, he sort of backed off and didn't go into detail, but you know how he is. I mean, yeah. Loose sink ship. I mean, the guy can't contain himself. He spills classified information all over the place. But it made me think, you know, maybe there is something really very dangerous and important in there. Now, you know, you have to wonder if the DOJ would have waited as long as they did if it was something that important. But maybe they you know, reassured themselves that it wasn't in danger. Nobody was, you know, going in there or whatever. And only in the last, you know, few weeks before the raid, when they got surveillance and saw people going in and out of there, then suddenly they made their move, which also makes me wonder, you know. So anyway, that's the big question, right? What did he want them for? What are these documents, and what in the world did he want them for that he was so willing to fight all the way to not send them back? And he sent back a few, right? Remember, yeah. He sent back a few. But he didn't send them all. What was left? What was it that he refused and did not want to give back to the archives? So, I mean, it's all a very, you know, it's an important issue. This isn't something that we can just sort of toss off and say, well, you know, that's old Trump. You know how he is. You know, he just spoke out of turn or whatever. This is a real thing. And he could have and may have seriously endangered American national security with this stuff.
And, you know, it is interesting because I've seen plenty of reports talking about how the foreign media has been covering this for the last 2 weeks. And there's a sense of panic. You know, they are taking it, you know, far more seriously than, you know, half the media here in the United States, because most of our media's, you know, got this conservative leaning, so they don't take it seriously. But the rest of the world does understand, and also they're panicked because we're a part of your, you know, nuclear alliance here. Australia, the UK, France, as you mentioned, and Canada, they have all, their media has sounded the alarm saying, this is terrifying, not just for America, but for us. He could have given information away about us. So we're putting our allies in danger. The people that if Trump gets back into office, there's no way in heck that they're going to work for him or work with him. Excuse me. Certainly not work for him. But we have to understand the not just our national security implications of this, but what it does across the globe, because there's plenty of countries out there that would probably love to have whatever information it is he had at Mar-a-Lago. And they know that, hey, all we got to do is what we pay the $200,000 fee to become a member. And then if we can sneak a guy past the guard, Bob's your uncle, we got the stuff. That's terrifying because that's all it would take. Yeah. And we know how much he loves money. We know how much all these other countries knew that and knew how to take advantage of that with his DC hotel. Yeah. It's terrifying when you start to think about these things that absolutely could have happened. And we don't know if they did or not.
Well, that's just it. We don't know if they did or not. That was been sitting there for 2 years almost. And who knows who's been in there or what he did with them. You know, I mean, there's reports that he personally went through the documents in 2021 back in December, that he was in there shuffling through them and deciding what to keep and what not. So, you know, it's very suspicious stuff. And you know, what you say about the foreign leaders is very important, because when you look at where we are in terms of national security and foreign policy, it's a very dicey moment. I mean, what's happening, particularly for the Europeans, with what's going on with Russia and Ukraine, this massive, you know, problem that we all have with energy and climate change and the environment, Russia's aggression, the Chinese, you know, I mean, this is not, you know, our allies are sitting there going, we have this rogue, you know, ex-president running around and with a faction of American voters, tens of millions of them, who, by the way, are, you know, they're backing Russia in the Russia and Ukraine and Persian. They are. They like Putin. They think,
yeah.
No, it's no big deal. You know, so he did a little invasion, you know, hey, you know, whatever. I mean, this is how they think. And you can imagine sitting there and you're, well, we have evidence of how they're thinking. Norway and Sweden just jumped right into NATO as fast as they could. And I'm not saying it's because of Donald Trump's documents. It's because of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. But nonetheless, that is the situation that they're in. They've avoided being in NATO since World War II. They remain neutral. They didn't want to be involved in it. And suddenly with this thing happening, they did that. And you can imagine how they and all the rest of those European countries are looking at this story and seeing that there is this tremendous intelligence, you know, leak, basically, that existed down there in Mar-a-Lago for months. They must be terrified about what's going on. And also just another, you know, another step in losing any kind of trust in the United States. I mean, how can you trust us as a country? We're the most powerful military on Earth and have the biggest nuclear arsenal. And we've got this nut down there in Florida, you know, with a bunch of his guests running through the, and, you know, and servants and employees and staff members running around. I mean, the FBI had to tell him, could you put another lock on it? Yeah. I mean, they literally had to tell him, we'd really appreciate it if you could just, you know, put a little lock on there because it's really bad. And I mean, that's how bad it was. And they said, well, you know, we've given you everything you need. Well, it's not somebody you can trust with those kinds of, you know, promises.
You know, you're absolutely right about all of this. And look, there's so much more we could talk about here, but we got to leave it at that for now, just because more is going to come out. And God only knows by the time everybody listens to this podcast, everything we're talking about could be so outdated. But definitely, we're going to bring you back on. We're going to continue talking about this, obviously, as more happens, because I think the craziness is only just starting to begin, and we're going to find out some truly just, I don't know, either terrifying or hilarious information. It's going to be one of those, maybe a combination of both. But Heather Digby Parton, thank you so much for joining me again today on Ring of Fire. Always a pleasure.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And that's it for the free portion of this week's Ring of Fire podcast. But if you want the full show every week, plus access to the entirety of the Ring of Fire podcast archives, go and sign up and become a member at rofpodcast.com.